Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the PPSAI Working Group call on the 12th of August 2014. On the call today, we have Holly Raitt, Griffin Barnett, Val Sherman, Upperschmidt, Chris Pelling, Tatiana Kremstova, Steve Metellitz, Don Blumenthal, Graham Bunton, Volker Greeman, Carlson Samuels, Sarah Wild, Darcy Southwell, Libby Bainey, Phil Morano, Phil McGrady, Paul McGrady, James Fladell, David Heath.
Thank you.
Osvaldo Nuova. We have apologies from Alex Deacon and Christina Rosette. From staff, we have Mary Wong, Amy Bivens, and myself, Terry Agnew. I apologize, also joining is Danielle and Della. I would also like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Don.
Appreciate it, Terry. Did somebody go on mute? Okay, I think that's better. There we go. Welcome. Is anybody else getting this echo that I'm getting?
Yes, this is Terry from staff. We're going to try to isolate that.
Okay, I appreciate it. Anyway, welcome to this morning's call. I'll do what I frequently forget to do, which is remind people to please update your SOIs if there's been any changes. Before we really get into the substance of our discussions today, just kind of a brief apology, I guess is the right word. I was a little on edge last week. A lot of things going on the personal side, and I think it just let it get to me a little too much. If nothing else, and you may be disappointed at this, if Michaela shows up, I promise we won't get into any mature back and forth like happened last week. I look back on that one and really couldn't believe it happened. In any event, I want to just insert one brief thing on our agenda here. We're coming up on deadline for submitting names for the funding for the face-to-face meeting. So if you haven't done that, please let Mary and Marika and whoever else should be on the list know who is going to be coming from your group and how many nights they'll need. As a reminder, there's, I think, six nights will be handled per group. I think that deadline is Friday, Mary?
Yes, Don, if we could get the names from each stakeholder group or constituency, whichever is applicable by this Friday, that would be great, because then it will allow you and constituency travel to be on the same page earlier rather than later. Thanks.
Okay. We have discussed the possibility of, if one group doesn't take all its nights, reallocating to others that have been, say, more active and might be able to use the extras, but that's still in the discussion stage, just depending on what kind of logistics problem it might create for us. I can't travel and whoever else is involved. That finishes the preliminary. We meaning the group that meets every Monday morning, Mary, Marika, Steve, Graham, and I kind of talked by email and then yesterday, and thought it'd be worthwhile to move on to E2. We still do have some issues pending from E1. We're particularly since they focus, some of them focus on just definitions of what might trigger actions. And those definitions are part of E2. We thought that going ahead would be beneficial because then we can look back. If you haven't seen your email this morning, or in the last 10 minutes, by strange coincidence, I got a copy of a terms of use policy that's used by a current proxy privacy registrar. I thought it was very interesting, and I really wished I'd had it to send out well before the call. But it triggered a lot of thoughts in terms of how we might approach our definitions, how things are laid out in E2. I've got to switch screens here because I can't read. What's in front of me. So, as usual, I like to just throw things open to see if people have thoughts, just to get us started in terms of the issues that are raised in the E2 template that Mary sent around. That Mary sent around yesterday. I'm sorry, I'm reading email that came in on this subject. Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve Metalitz. Just to get things started here, the question asks, should the providers be required to forward to the customer all allegations of illegal activities they receive relating to specific domain names of the customer? And the proposed answer is yes. I mean, the real issue here is defining this phrase, all allegations of illegal activities, and I think that's where the indicative lists that we talked about in an earlier phase come in handy, as well as the material that Don circulated by email earlier today, and that appears in most of the other, in different forms, and most of the other terms of service that we've compiled or that the staff has compiled. I don't know that we need to define with excruciating detail what exactly is encompassed within all allegations of illegal activities. We certainly have many examples of it in these lists, and question is how exact and precise does that need to be? And this kind of goes back to E1. If you're building a additive list of what needs to be forwarded upon request or relayed, then this category needs to be in there. If you're that's the second option that's been put forward. If you're if you're taking the approach that everything should be forwarded subject to commercially reasonable filtering, then you just need to make it clear that commercially reasonable filtering doesn't capture this stuff. So I think it really could kind of go either way, but I think we have these lists, and that may be sufficiently clear to move forward.
Thanks for getting it started. James?
Hi, Don. James speaking for the transcript, and I've been absent for the last 2 weeks, so hopefully I'm not too far behind on this discussion. But I wanted to say that although my immediate reaction to the question is no, I actually agree with Don, and I think that it just needs a couple of tweaks, and then it will be fixed. The language of the question would be something along the lines of, should ICANN-accredited privacy proxy service providers be required to forward allegations of, either all allegations, we would say well-founded allegations, because that is the language of the RAA, and that helps us as service providers to ensure that, you know, let's say spurious or just abusive allegations are not necessarily forwarded. And then the second bit would be, unless otherwise directed as part of an investigation, there have been certainly a number of occasions where law enforcement or other organizations do not want to alert the registrant or the customer that they are the subject of an investigation. You know, and that may be actually part of a court order or other legal action on a registrar or service provider in this case to not reveal that that is ongoing. So I would say in this case, we certainly don't want to put a registrar or service provider in a position where a court is telling them don't alert this registrant that they're the subject of an investigation, but then the IT policy requires them to do so. So I think with those two fixes, you know, we're probably good to go on this requirement.
Appreciate it. How, just a question though, how does an organization determine well-founded?
Well, that is an excellent question, and it certainly doesn't lend itself to an immediate answer. I think that the key is to ensure, first and foremost, that the jurisdiction matches to some extent. But secondly, I think to ensure that what is being alleged as illegal activity is in fact illegal, according to the legal counsel of the service provider, and where they exist or where they believe their customer exists or the jurisdiction that governs their registration agreement or whatever. You know, I really don't have a quick answer, but certainly we cannot forward every allegation simply on face value. That is, I think that, you know, can lead itself to abuse fairly quickly.
Okay. Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve. James, could you specify what the abuse is that you're concerned about? I mean, it certainly...
For example, Steve, recently we received something from another country where they did not like a website that was using their language and was advertising or blogging about firearms. They said firearms are not legal in our country. We want you to take this site down. And give us some information on who's operating this site. And,
well, that's obviously, James, that's not what we're talking about here, because that's not a relay request. That's a reveal request and a takedown request. Service providers can't take down because they're not registrars.
Okay, well, that's...
This is relay, so could you tell me what you think would be the abuse if you forward all allegations of illegal activities as a matter of relay?
Take that same request, Steve, and convert it to a relay request. Then, if that suits you, I'm giving you an example of a not well-founded or a poorly founded allegation of illegal activity.
So, what's the harm?
The harm in forwarding?
Yeah.
Well, I think
customer receives a poorly founded allegation. Is that how harmful is that?
Well, the harm is that you're being contacted, you're receiving unsolicited communication, which is the whole point of enlisting this service.
Okay, I'll be interested in people's reactions as to how serious
but Volker's got his hand up here.
Well, I can see quite a lot of abusive situations. For example, if the message is that we're being asked to forward is phrased in a very intimidating way, there may be illegal activity that's not, or activity that might be illegal, but it's not obviously illegal, so we wouldn't be able to determine that. And by forwarding such messages, we would then put the domain owner in a situation where he might feel threatened or intimidated by the receipt of that message. And he explicitly uses this service to for example, have his free speech right uninterrupted, and he doesn't have the in Germany you say the scissors in your head, so to speak. So you are influenced, but in what you're writing, you don't have censorship, but you're self-censoring yourself. So that may be a factor that could be constituting abuse of forwarding on messages that are abusive in themselves.
Steve, is that an old hand?
That was an old
hand. Apparently it was. Okay, thanks.
But I'll be glad to raise a new hand.
But that's a new one. Well, okay, I was about to jump in, but go for it.
I guess, so Volker, are you also willing, as James is, to take on the obligation of determining whether a complaint or whether an allegation is well-founded? And if so, what recourse is there or should there be if you on your decision? I mean,
well,
legal activity by one of your customers. How should I be able to challenge your determination that that my complaint of illegal activities is not well-founded?
Well, I adjudicate these under under German law, so I look at the complaint and see if what the complaint is about is obviously illegal. If I feel that the complaint is not abusive, is not threatening, for example, in an undue manner, of course there may be threatening words in a due manner, so I am able to analyze the message itself and decide on its merits whether I forward or not.
Thanks. I'm racking up my own questions here, but I'll defer. Susan?
I'm just really curious to know that every time I send out an email to a proxy service, there's going to be a live person reviewing that email for the content, the subject matter, and making a legal decision on whether or not I'm overstepping my trademark rights or overstepping and providing a chilling effect to the registrant. So if you do not want to relay things, are the proxy service providers going to actually review every email that comes into the email address on record for that domain name registration?
Well, James is next up, or Volker can respond to the question.
This is James. I'll go ahead and respond. Yes, Susan, if it is a request to reveal or a request to relay that's coming from, let's say, someone with whom we haven't established history of processing those reports, I think that human intervention is almost always called for in those cases. I don't think you can automate that. Certainly you can't automate the checks and the tests and the analysis that Volker was discussing. I think I wanted to just kind of touch back on something Steve said, which is how do we challenge if a registrar or an affiliated service provider says, we don't believe this is a well-founded request, how does the requester then escalate that and essentially say, you're wrong in this case and we do want you to reveal or relay the information? And I think that case, we would specifically point out that we always respond to court orders or subpoenas or any other sort of formal due process that would require us to reveal communications or relay communications or reveal the customer information. I think what we're talking about here is what would our obligations be short of a legal process, which would be in an ICANN policy, or even just a cooperative best practice. And I think that's where service providers will say that we need to have discretion in those situations. But I was just trying to come back and make sure that Steve is aware that, you know, I don't think we're saying that they should have no obligation to relay those communications. It's just what are the thresholds or the tests that need to be passed first before we can require that to happen.
Thanks. Volker, and then I'm going to jump in with a couple of issues. Susan's question at least took one off the table.
Thanks, Don. Volker Grammer speaking. Just to respond to Susan's question, it kind of depends on how the service is set up and what the service is designed to do. In our service, there's two options. You write to the abuse contact, and then someone will look at it and someone will make a determination on the complaint, or you write it to the automatic forwarding and then it will be scanned if it's spam and it's filtered, and so there's some filtering happening there as well. But you also have service providers that are mass market. You have service providers that are only catering for a very small customer base, for example, lawyers that are engaged to provide privacy services for their customers for whatever reason they're doing that. So you have to look at the big picture here, that there's different kinds of privacy services engaged for different purposes, and each of these may be set up differently. Some of them will only have manual forwarding. Some of them will only have automated forwarding. Some of them, big market ones, will probably have a version of both, but it really depends on how the system is set up and how the service is set up.
Can I respond to that, Don?
Sure.
So, but since we're designing what the requirements will be going forward, then I think what I hear you and James advocating for is no relay, and only relay if you've decided that it is, if the proxy service provider has reviewed each and every email and decided that it fits the criteria, for relay. Is that what you're advocating for?
Not necessarily. I think we need to find the minimum standard of notifying someone of a problem with a domain name that's under privacy services. How that is dealt with, how that minimum standard looks like, that's something that we should determine here. But I would be very cautious in advocating any business model that would exclude a competitor from continuing to provide their business.
Thank you.
Okay. And again, as each piece gets discussed here, my questions are kind of disappearing. I'll reformulate it and hand it over to Steve again.
Yeah, this is Steve. Don, I'm happy to go have you go first if you want, but otherwise I can.
Oh no, I've got to kind of, like I said, things are getting answered that I had planned to ask, so I'm gonna.
Okay.
Reformulate in the background.
It's good that you're getting answers, because I don't think I'm getting any answers, and I hear from James and from Volker that there should be a standard, but I'm not clear what it is. And James, I still don't understand what my recourse is, other than getting going to court and getting a subpoena. If you refuse to forward an email, again, we're not talking about takedown here. If you refuse to forward an email in which I claim that one of your customers using your service is violating my intellectual property rights or committing, engaged in operating botnets, phishing, piracy, fraudulent or deceptive practices, anything on this list, what's my recourse? And of course, you know, James, I'm sure that in the U.S., the court is going to say, if I seek a subpoena, have you asked the service provider first. So I'm just not clear what my recourse is in your view.
Don, you want me to?
Yep. I was going to say, since you're next on the list, go for it.
Well, this is kind of a response to Steve and Susan. You know, I think, I don't know that we're talking about the same thing. You know, I'm not saying that we should have no obligations to relay those communications or reveal I'm saying that when we're establishing obligations, you know, we can have reasonable discussions on this group, and certainly I think, you know, those of us who have worked with, those of you who worked with the privacy services that I'm affiliated with know that we have some very, you know, we're very responsive in this regard. But we're kind of taking a hard line here, unfortunately, because we have to, because we know how compliance, we can anticipate how compliance is going to enforce this on us. And essentially what they're going to do is they're going to hold our contract against us or pit us in a gap between our contract and our contract with ICANN and our legal obligations. And so what we're trying to say here is that if we're going to put anything in place, at least what, I don't want to speak for Volker, but we're trying to say, what I'm trying to say is if we're going to put some obligations in place, contractual obligations, they have to mirror what's in the RAA to some extent and also they can't necessarily be over and above what our obligations are legally, because then you know, I believe that puts registrars and other service providers in a difficult position of either respecting the rights of their customers or following their ICANN contract. And I think it's too it's unfortunately our our experience with the 2013 RAA is that we don't have a lot of wiggle room here in when we are faced with these issues with compliance. So so my thinking here is let's find ways that we can develop, you know, very clear escalation paths, that we have terms that mirror the RAA, like well-founded. So far, to my understanding, that has not created those types of issues that Steve was raising, where people are just stonewalling requesters, legitimate requests. At least I'm not aware of that happening. And that's in a similar situation, where is it abusive to let someone know that they're the subject of an investigation? I don't know. But I know that that it does come up, and this is something that we certainly don't want to put ourselves in the position where we're between a rock and a hard place, between the cops and between ICANN, and I'm concerned that's the path we're going down with some of this.
Appreciate it, Paul, and then I will use my prerogative.
Thank you. My question relates to the end user and what their recourse is if the privacy proxy service gets it wrong on Relay. Maybe these privacy proxy services all have in-house legal staff that can make multi-jurisdictional analysis and decide that, you know, this or that claim is baseless under all the possible applicable jurisdictions. But my concern is that what we're talking about is a decision not to forward a legal notice of a regarding potential criminal activity or potential rights violations, things of that nature. And the customer might better their position legally if it turns out to be a real problem that the privacy proxy service didn't spot, if that end user is able to act sooner rather than later. So what are the protections for the customer when the privacy proxy service gets it wrong if they refuse to relay the message? Thanks.
Appreciate it. And by legal notice, you're suggesting something short of court order, correct?
Correct. There's all kinds of notice letters and other communications that are short of, you know, complaints in court. Sure.
Okay. Just clarifying. I just want to raise two things. First, to what extent should we be to what extent should we be really drawing comparisons between what a registrar is required to do and what a proxy service provider is required to do? How analogous are they in terms of what the outcomes of their communications are going to be? To be honest, I'm concerned that a little bit of what I'm hearing is suggesting what compliance may or may not be doing in a context that might really not apply with privacy proxy. The second thing I want to point out is we're talking here about baseline requirements. So I just want to remind that a proxy privacy provider could be very expansive. Should we require them to be expansive, or is it, say, the minimalist approach that I've heard suggested acceptable as the baseline, with freedom for providers to go way beyond that? And I hope my question on the first part was clear enough. Let me know if it wasn't, because I'm not quite sure. Stephanie?
Yes, thanks, Stephanie Perrin. I was just going to insert another rock in this rock and a hard place scenario. I'm wondering if folks that are subject to spam legislation have a view on whether a requirement to relay traffic that is not well-founded, let's just use that word, would be a violation of the spam legislation. We have brand new spam legislation in Canada, and it seems to me that this could become a way of subverting that legislation, because the privacy proxy service provider has a prior relationship with the client. The folks that are sending the mail do not. So, just a question.
Yes. Hassel. The Canadian law. I see your point. I think, I'll just toss this out, because I don't think we want to get into deep discussions of the CAN-SPAM and CASEL and whatever laws there are. I think there would be an easy workaround in terms of contracts. Requiring provisions whereby a proxy privacy user would agree to accept relayed messages. Quick and dirty lawyer input. Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve Metalitz. I want to respond to, Don, what I think your question was, if I understood it, and that is how this relates to the RAA standards. And I think that it's quite different because, again, let's remember, all we're talking about here is a relay. The RAA is a basis, that's the registrar who can take away the registration. Here we're talking about relay. The provider, it's true. I mean, if you look at the Bains by Proxy's terms of service, it goes on for a couple of pages about the basis on which it can take away the proxy service in its sole discretion without any liability to you whatsoever, because it has absolute right and power. Again, I don't see much of a rock or hard place from the service provider's perspective with that language, and there's all of these different bases on which they can even cancel the service. We're not even talking about that. We're talking here about relay. So, again, I'm not sure that I see what it would be great if every service provider had a set of platonic guardians who would weigh the validity of every relay request that was received and determine by some absolute standard whether it was right or not. But in our world, I think we have to look at what would be the harm that would be inflicted on the customer if a notice were relayed that subsequently turned out not to be well-founded. And it just doesn't seem to me that harm is that great. At the same time, neither James nor Volker has really come up with what they agree there should be some standard, but I'm not clear on what they think the standard should be. or the obligation to relay. So again, I think we should just keep the consequences in mind here. The consequences here are very different than under the RAA, because we're just talking about receiving a message. Thanks.
Yeah, I think you did understand my question. I appreciate building some context around it to clarify. Holly?
Just a comment in reply to Stephanie. I don't think it's a problem not relaying spam. I think if you do relay spam, and certainly we've got anti-spam legislation as well, the party that's liable is never the ISP, never the person in the middle. It's always the person who actually provides it in the first place. But I don't think it's a worry. I think if people get very good spam filters, everybody's happy all the way around, except that the person's trying to send it. Thanks.
Yes, but contracts are nice just to remove any doubt.
Yep.
I'm speaking as one of the resident attorneys. James?
Hi, Don. You kind of put a capstone on it there. Is that I agree with Holly. I don't think that there is a real concern from perspective of a service provider that those sorts of relayed notifications, where they themselves become considered to be spam, because of the contracts. You know, we certainly have to require registrants to agree to abide by ICANN policies, and I'm certain that any sort of terms of service of a privacy proxy, accredited privacy proxy terms of service agreement would have some similar language requiring them to agree to accept those types of emails. And also, I don't believe or anticipate that this would be happening in bulk. I think it would probably be a targeted exercise specific to a case-by-case basis for each domain name. Going back to Steve, I think that we're actually closer on this than it sounds, although I'm sort of taking a hard line just as a thought experiment on this particular issue, because I think that we do agree that there should be some standards or some test. I think that where service providers are now, today, and he's citing the example of domains by proxy, is that we have a lot of leeway to make those determinations on our own. And I think that the two choices that face this working group is, do we take that discretion away from service providers and essentially give them very prescriptive procedures and definitions on what they have to do in any given scenario, or do we, on the other side, do we sort of maintain that discretion with the understanding that that the good actors in this space will always, take responsible actions here, and that the bad actors will become, will stick out like a sore thumb, and then we'll have some contractual basis to take action against them and get them to change their behavior or get out of the space. And I think that's where I'm coming from on this, is that we have a lot of discretion right now. We would hate to see that turn into a binding of the hands type situation, most especially because that would also require a lot of definitional work and the building of procedures into contracts, and I think that that would be a heavy lifting scenario too. So I don't really think that we're, at least I'm not, I don't want to speak for Volker, I'm not taking this hard line, because I actually want to be able to disregard these types of requests. I'm thinking more along the lines of when this becomes a contractual obligation that a service provider's ability to stay in business is predicated upon, then I think that we need to either be as clear as possible, or we need to give them the discretion to operate responsibly.
Thanks, Volker. And then I'm going to refocus. We've got a lot of sub-questions here, and I'd like to at least take a stab at them.
Thanks, Don. Volker speaking. I think James is right on the money. We're not looking for something that says you don't have to forward at all. I think we're looking for a certain amount of discretion here. For example, cases where forwarding would be abused, cases where someone says, I explicitly do not want any emails from person X, cases where we filter out spam-like complaints or spam-like communications. So what we're looking for is the discretion of the privacy proxy service provider to say, no, I will not forward this for whatever reason that is understandable. Not for any old reason, but there should be a discretion here that certain messages or certain types of messages or certain types of senders should be excluded from the privilege of being able to use the service. Just as I can take the privilege of saying, no, you cannot use the Whois abuse, Whois inaccuracy complaint procedure anymore because you abuse it. That's the same thing that we're looking for here as well.
Okay. Thanks. I think we've gone back and forth on this quite a bit, and not seeing anybody new. Steve, I would like to move on, but sometimes you...
No, I'll hold up.
Okay. Appreciate it. I think a lot of this discussion has spiraled in and out of E1, and that's kind of what I expected, although it would have been nice to have a cleaner cut. To be honest, and I'm just throwing this out, you know, we have what we have in terms of language, but one of the issues that has been raised here is what's illegal, what's not, in what jurisdiction, and that's going to be a challenge. And at least from my background, there are a lot of reasons you might want to identify a beneficial registrant that really don't relate to illegal activities as such. I don't know how free we are to expand how we define where communication should be forwarded, but I just want to plant that thought that there are reasons to want to know the holder of the domain that don't necessarily involve illegal activities. For example, just trying to resolve a commercial dispute. With that tossed out for consideration, because it's a little off the edge, I would like to go through the questions that we have here. You know, we've touched a little bit in the past about obligations to do the relay and whether they should cover paper or just email. You know, but what we haven't gotten into, and I'm not sure we resolved that, but should the complainant be identified? Arguably, and Mary, could you bring up, and I probably should have asked this before, could you just bring up the template questions? Not the template questions. Questions as we posed them in our list that was sent out a long time ago.
Did you mean this document, Don, or the charter questions?
The grouped charter questions in E2.
All right. Give me a couple of minutes. I'm going to need to upload that.
Okay. Yeah, like I said, I should have... sometimes looking at those kind of focuses things, it's easy to get lost in the templates. You know, there's some questions in here about... excuse me. That I think may be covered by the discretionary discussion we've just had. But there are a couple that aren't. But I do want to bring this up to maybe frame some of the discussion we've already had and also to identify something that did a couple of things we really haven't talked about. And one thing we, and I'll add something else we haven't talked about is part of our discussion today was, well, if something isn't forwarded, what recourse does the requester have? Well, are we going to require that the requester be informed that something hasn't been forwarded? It's kind of been left by the wayside in talking about this notion of not forwarding. Steve?
Yeah, thanks. This is Steve Metalitz. I agree with you that there really are a couple of questions that flow from the position that the service provider should have discretion to do on what to forward. By the way, that's the status quo, as James pointed out, but we're here to actually come up with standards that may change the status quo. Hopefully they would reflect good practices that are existing now, but there is the whole idea of having an accreditation system is a change from the status quo. So I think that's kind of part of the landscape here. I think if there is if we follow the route that James and Volker have suggested, then I think we need to know what's the recourse. If the service provider is going to have discretion to refuse to forward an allegation of illegal activity or abusive activity, then we need to know, obviously the requester needs to be informed of that, and we need to know what recourse they would have. So, I think it's a thought experiment is fine, but at some point we need to try to come up with the standards that we think should apply in the accreditation context, and I think it would have to address those questions if we went down the route that James and Volker are advocating. Thank you.
Thanks. Mary, could you scroll down to E2? I'm going to key Volker up, and I just heard a crash that I've got to go investigate. I'll be back in about a minute.
Okay, Volker speaking, and I would like to respond to hear an echo of myself, sorry. I would like to respond to what Steve said with regard to the status quo. I disagree kind of with the point he was making that we need to change the status quo. We need to look at this actual status quo and see if there's problems with that status quo. And if there are problems with that status quo, then we might look at fixing them and how to best fix them. But if most privacy proxy service providers provide the service in a way that's already in position that the status quo is fine for those privacy proxy providers and only a certain amount of bad actors need to be filtered out, then we should look at what the minimum standard should be and what kind of behavior we do not want. So I don't see that the status quo is necessarily a problem. If there is a problem, then that should be analyzed and brought to the forefront.
Is Don back? In his absence, this is Steve. Let me just respond to Volker. Yeah, I agree. There's a place to look at what are the good practices that are going on today. But right now the status quo is that there is no recourse in this setting. I mean, there is no way to weed out bad actors. If a service provider has a policy of not forwarding, and if they state that, if they're affiliated with a 2013 RAA registrar, they have to post their policies, but if their policy is we won't forward these things, that is the policy of some, a stated policy of some service providers, at least under some circumstances, then there really isn't any recourse. So even if they're, if we go down the route that you and James are advocating, if we want to weed out bad actors, there has to be some test by which they can be weeded out. So I guess we would be awaiting what your proposal is on what that recourse would be and what that standard would be on the basis of which some entity would be labeled a bad actor for refusal to forward. Thanks.
Okay, I'm back. It was worse than I thought. Somebody went off the road and is in my neighbor's living room. Not somebody, somebody in a car.
Oh, wow.
But there's plenty of neighbors there, so I'll refocus here. Is everybody down at E? You folks could scroll down to E2. I guess we have automatic. I was hoping we wouldn't go back to the core of the question we were kicking around. I'm looking at this list under E2, and I think we have, at least indirectly, addressed many of the questions here. But again, a while back we discussed forwarding email or paper. What are folks' thoughts on whether we came to a resolution on that? Should paper be forwarded?
Okay. Yes, 2 points. One to respond to what Stephen was asking, and one to your point. The first one, I'm going to say, I don't think that paper should be forwarded at all, provided email is forwarded. Steve has been asking about minimum standard. I think that in some form, the provider must offer a way to forward communications, whether that be by email, automated, manual. That's the provider's prerogative. If the provider says everything has to be sent by notarized letters, that might be going a bit too far. But if he says, "I don't forward email, I just forward postal messages," that would be another acceptable way of forwarding messages. If that is abused, there has to be a certain way to disable the forwarding. For example, if somebody is known as a spammer, or if the registrant explicitly says, "I don't want to have any communications forwarded of a certain nature," that should be also a possibility of providing the service. But then the responsibility would be on the provider to tell the complainant that this is not being forwarded because of reason X.
Okay, James?
Hi, James speaking. So I kind of disagree with Volker. No, wait, I'm not sure I do. Let me just, I have a very nuanced thought on this here regarding the forwarding of paper or physical communications, let's call it. I believe they should be forwarded. However, I do not necessarily believe that simply translates into a line in the contract that the privacy proxy provider shall forward these communications, physical communications. But I think that this is a much bigger issue than just simply, you know, checking that box, making it a requirement, and moving on. For example, we should be very clear about what types of physical communications we're talking about. You know, I have seen, you know, crank mail that has numbered in that is not measured in pages but in pounds. We should not, as a working group, discount the idea that there are some very we could say passionate, or we could say unhinged, people who feel very strongly about the internet and like to talk about it either via email or printed documents. So I think that by setting some basic standards, for example, if something is delivered via registered mail or a courier or something along those lines, I think that is bar that must be passed in order for to trigger a forwarding requirement. And then I think to allow the service provider to recover a reasonable cost associated with that from the requester. I think that if someone sends us a FedEx and says, you know, "You must forward this to Turkey," you know, and it weighs 37 pounds or whatever. I feel like there should be some guidelines there that say that allow a service provider to say, okay, then, you know, if you want us to do that, it's going to be $57, and here's the bill. We're not just making that up and adding off profit margin. We are entitled to recover our costs for that, and that should not be burdened on the privacy proxy customer, because that could be abused as well. So those are just my thoughts here on physical forwarding. I think that it is a good idea, but there need to be some control to ensure that we're not opening the door to someone burying either a provider or their customers, burying them in paper or burying them in shipping costs. Thanks.
Thanks. That's helpful. Volker and then Mary.
Well, I think I do disagree with James a bit here. I think that paper is an option, but it shouldn't be a requirement. So if a provider says, I will forward paper, then that's prerogative, but that shouldn't be a requirement to forward paper. If a provider says, I will trash any paper communications which I receive, because you can use email and email will be fulfilling the same purpose that paper communications would be, then that's his prerogative. If he can say, I got this paper communication from you, send it again per email and I will forward, that should fill the requirements. So, yes, paper should be trashable, paper should be forwardable, but there shouldn't be a requirement either way.
Okay, thanks. So many questions, so little time. Susan?
So we're talking about paper now, but I don't think we've ever come to a decision on relay. So if you're relying on, if you're not going to forward paper and you haven't agreed that everyone should relay, if the minimum basic requirement is that a proxy provider relays the email, then what is our, how do we contact the registrant or the licensee?
Well, are those really the same thing? You know, can't we look at paper versus email in the abstract without having, it's a threshold issue of being able to decide what should be forwarded based on substance?
I don't think so. I think that...
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
I mean, I just feel like, okay, we've sort of tabled one topic, and now we're going on to another topic. Well, you know, my viewpoint on the forwarding of paper is guided by the relay of the email. You know, what we've decided on that, and if we haven't decided that all emails will be relayed, or that email addresses should be good for at least a month instead of a day or 2 weeks. That, I mean, there's a lot of issues there, and, you know, Carlton was and others were calling out for let's write down all the issues or, you know, discuss all the issues. Then how can we make a decision about paper? I'm just confused.
Okay. All right. Well, we're up at 11 o'clock. Very quickly, we could theoretically decide that there is absolutely that proxy providers have to forward everything that's email, but nothing that's in paper. I mean, that's on the table. Mary, and then we'll have to fold.
Thanks, Don. Just real quickly, I wanted to take your take a step back approach and just remind folks that wherever we go with this, that this set of questions came out from the recommendations of the WHOIS review team, and what they wanted was for us to look at a standardized process, hopefully with standardized timeframes, so that the goal is to have something that's clear, consistent, and enforceable. And this goes to some of the comments people are making in the chat about there not being a standard practice. So as folks start thinking about these different questions, I just wanted to put in that reminder. Thanks.
Appreciate it. We're just a little bit after 11. I know quite a few people on this call, I expect, have to jump to the Domain Collisions webinar, including me. So So we'll be in touch before next Tuesday, but let's close this one down. Thanks for participating.
Thanks, Don.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Don, and everyone.
Andre, if you can please stop the recording.
Thank you very much, everyone.